session number 9437, reel 8.
Elizabeth Hughes, tape 8. Talking of recreation, you know, were you ever able to sort of see theatre or
When we were in Yunnan, while the American Army team was still there, they had films flown in whenever planes came in, and they would quite often invite us. So we saw quite a lot of up-to-date American films during the time we were there. We'd perhaps go to the cinema twice a week.
What sort of things were you looking at? The sort of current American films?
Yes, absolutely. Musicals and cowboy films and all that sort of stuff. Doris Day, you know, the things that were popular at the end of the war.
And did the Chinese come to them as well?
Very few. But, of course, the film's a marvellous way to learn English, so any interpreters who could come would come. But they were usually... I suppose they had to have invitations from the American Army people, so the numbers were kept down fairly... I suppose at the most it would be 100, I think, and usually only about 20, I think.
These planes, did they often bring stores in?
Yes, I think they came in... they were meant to come in about twice a week. But it did vary very much, and often weather conditions wouldn't be suitable at one place or another. So my husband's diary is full of things. Went to Yunnan to see if there was any mail, but the plane didn't come in. But I think we got there at the beginning of December, but we left early in March, and all through February they were saying, this will be the last plane, this will be the last plane. And then, of course, we didn't have any films once the Americans left. And it was a bit irregular, but the army did keep in touch with their group there in Yunnan, bringing supplies in. And
how about the FSU? You know, what contact did you have with your headquarters?
Well, we sent letters out on these planes, and we had good contact then. But later it became very, very difficult. We were completely isolated. The communists did have a radio contact with outside, but it was very tenuous, and we weren't always anywhere near where the railway, radio receiver was. In fact, it was probably kept at a secret place. Later we did have contact with it when things had settled down a good deal.
Did you form relationships with the Chinese? You know, were you friendly with them?
We were very friendly with them, and Margaret Stanley particularly, and Jack Dodds to a slightly lesser degree, made very close contacts with their Chinese friends. And also there was a Chinese doctor, Li Bing, who we were very, very friendly with. She was a lovely person. She spoke very good English. Actually, she'd been trained as a nurse in an American mission hospital, and... In the communist areas, if you've been a nurse for so long, you automatically become a doctor. In fact, on several occasions, you know, they'd say, "What are you?" And I'd say, "A nurse." And they'd say, "How long have you been a nurse?" You see, and I'd say, 8 years. They'd say, "Well, then you're a doctor, aren't you?" But Li Bing had been taken under the wing of a German-trained Chinese surgeon called Dr. Zhou, and he had really made a special effort to train her much further than most of the other Chinese nurses who had become doctors. And she was a very efficient surgeon and a very efficient doctor all round, and her English was excellent. Later, when we met her in Peking, and she was director of the Cancer Institute in Peking. In fact, she appeared on television in a film. They discovered a form of cancer of the throat in a certain part of China, and there was this television film in which she didn't speak English, she only spoke Chinese, because they discovered what caused this special cancer that occurred in this one area, and she'd carried out this marvellous, or I presume she'd been responsible for this marvellous scheme, taking specimens from people in the area and so on, and finding out what caused this particular cancer. It was something to do with a fungus in the grain that the chickens ate. I can't remember the details now, but anyway, this film was shown in on English television with Dr. Li Bing.
Did they know about your pacifism, do you think, the Chinese?
They partly understood, but we didn't press it. And I think they must have known, because they didn't. They did sometimes talk about their glorious victories and so on, but they never pushed that side of things down onto us at all. And we, in a way, because we felt we weren't doing as much as we should be for them, we never pushed it our side either. You were talking about relationships. We had these two interpreters. We got on very close terms with them. One of them walked around with Grey's Anatomy under his arm, saying he was going to become a doctor. But actually, he became a political leader. He was a very dedicated communist. But again, he did not push things at us. One day was interesting. As I say, they did pass on news to us. We were in a very isolated place, and he came to us one day and said, I have some very sad news for you. And we wondered what it was. And it was the assassination of Gandhi. I thought that was very interesting that they would have picked that out as something that would be of great interest to us. And it made quite an impression on the intelligentsia there. And it was nice that they'd thought to get the message through to us, particularly because, as I say, it must have come that news from headquarters at some time from where they had the contact with outside.
Could I ask you now then about the departure from Yan'an, you know, and the events leading up to this?
Yes.
When were you aware that something was, you know, happening?
Well, I suppose it must have been fairly early in March that we realised that things were going to change for the worse. And that
March 47, that
March
would be, 47,
wouldn't it? Mm. Yes. And before that, things had definitely been rather unstable. There'd been skirmishes around Xi'an, and there's a direct valley up the Yellow River which gives access to Yan'an. And then it became... Mao Zedong kept disappearing because the journalists used to get very annoyed because they couldn't see him, and things like that, which were all indicative that there was something coming. And nobody returned to the hospital, and it was the reverse. Equipment that was of any use was being removed and so on. And
were there any indications with the Americans? Really?
Yes, I think there'd been five of them, and I think two of them were withdrawn. I think sometime in February, and I think the last people must have gone, probably just about the turn of the end of February, beginning of March. I don't really remember exactly when. I don't suppose we were even informed. It was probably kept fairly quiet. Margaret Stanley and Frank Miles came in only a few days before we moved off, so they didn't really have much chance to see anything in Yan'an. And first of all, we were going to establish a hospital about 30 miles from Yan'an, and when we first left, there was a road for 20 miles, and we went in a petrol powered vehicle for this 20 miles. All the hospital equipment we were taking went on muleback. But then we had to walk about another 10 miles, I think, or perhaps not so far, to a village where we were meant to set up the hospital more or less permanently. In fact, we'd taken things like glass windows from the operating theatre in Yan'an, and I think we took we must have taken things like the theatre lamps, or certainly the mobile theatre lamps, because we had generators at that time, and we presumed there'd be petrol. But we hadn't been very long in this place where we were meant to set up when... we had to move again because of the military situation. We could hear bombing in Yan'an.
Do you know if there was any destruction of stores, you know, if anything was left, that is, and buildings in Yan'an?
The buildings weren't destroyed as far as I know, but some things may have been destroyed.
Before you left?
Or taken away and buried, which is... there was a match factory in Yan'an, and that was what they said that the nationalists were bombing when we heard this bombing. We were only 7 days in that first village, and then we were two in another, and five in another, and one in another, and then five in another. All this time we were walking. We had Chinese cloth shoes by then, which were very comfortable. As our shoes wore out, they provided us with Chinese shoes. And they couldn't believe that the men had such enormous feet. We used to give them patterns, and we always imagined they took one look and thought, nobody's got feet that big, and made them as they thought. But anyway, eventually the men were always equipped, and certainly my husband and I both had corns on the bottom of our feet. And while we were in China wearing these cloth shoes and never walking on a metalled road, they completely disappeared. We hadn't been home in England more than 6 months, and we'd both got them back again. Mind you, the walking was quite rough sometimes, yes, up and down the hills.
If you could just give me an outline of...
just the outline of me.
..of the areas you walked through and the sort of approximate date, and then we can look at the detail. I think that would be the best thing. Yeah. You were walking through Shenxi province,
yes, this
you?
Was Shenxi province, up and down these lowest hills. As I say, the villages were only about 3 or 4 miles apart, often. Sometimes they were further. And the Chinese measure by li, but then often you will say, how many li is it to somewhere? And they'll say 10, you see. And they'll say, is it long li or short li? And they'll think, and they'll say, oh, it's long li. Or sometimes they'll say it's short li. That is often explained by the fact that watercourses have changed direction, and so the path has had to be altered, but they still retain the old measurement. Or possibly there's been a landslide or something like that, you see. But really asking the peasants how far it was from places was not very rewarding. We were on the move between May the 25th and the 30th. Then we were in the place, that place, until August the 6th, when we crossed the Yellow River into Shanxi province, which is exactly the same as Shanxi, just the other side of the Yellow River. Then from August the 21st till March the 22nd the next year, we were in one village, which was in quite a wide valley with a great cliff where the river sweeping round at the bottom and gradually been eroding it.
What was the name of that village?
That was Shabetai. That's where David was born. And then we moved to another place in March, and from April the 29th till July the 10th, we were in another place also in Shanxi province.
And then back to Yan'an, was it?
Then we went back to Yan'an. Well, that took quite a long time. We left this village on the 10th of July, and we didn't get to Yan'an until the 18th. It was 8 days crossing the Yellow River. That wasn't too bad. But that was all walking, of course.
Yes. So when you set off on this, really it was well over a year, wasn't
yes.
it, the March?
Yes.
Who actually went? How many of you? What sort of outfit was
yes,
it?
Yes, well, we started from Yan'an with about, 30 or 40 nurses carrying their own packs and other ancillary staff. And there was our group and the doctors with, there were 3 or 4 doctors came with us, Chinese doctors. And the interpreters, of course. And gradually, as we moved, I think we must have collected more people, because it was quite a big group in the end. There'd be about 100 staff, I should think. And then, of course, when we had to move with patients, which we didn't do the first move, local people had to be recruited to carry the patients. Of course, local people were recruited to transport the belongings. They'd bring their pack animals, and so that they could carry the loads. The loads are strapped onto wooden frames, and then the frames are lifted onto the animals. And sometimes you'd have 2 people holding the load, and that you'd blindfold the mule and lead him under the load and drop it into the special rack on his back at the crucial moment, so it was too late for him to realise what he'd got landed with.
Did you take the entire hospital with you, would you say?
Well, it's rather difficult to describe what the hospital would be. We took things like small sterilisers, and actually at one place we got this big sterilizer, which was about 7 or 8 feet tall. I don't know quite how that could have been brought. I know the generator and the x-rays were brought. They were put on ox carts at various times, and then occasionally they'd have to be carried, and they'd need at least a team of about 20 men to carry it, because they'd have to they'd have about 10 people carrying it at a time, but you had to have reliefs to change over. And that was the same with the patients, because of course there were no nice light stretchers. They were great clumsy things made out of wood, and they'd have ropes at either end that went up to a pole, so that you'd have 2 men carrying it on a pole at one end and 2 men on a pole at the other end. but there'd be a team of six to each stretcher, so that there'd be men to change over, because the terrain was very rough.
And these men, the stretcher bearers, would have been the villagers, would
they'd have been villagers, yes. They would have been recruited to for that purpose.
What would have been in it for them? Had you any idea?
Yes, I think tax relief, or possibly land, but I think usually tax relief. I expect some of the tax was paid in kind anyway.
Where did the others go? You know, I was thinking of these top communists and the people who weren't associated with the hospital. Had you any idea?
Well, we'd imagined that Mao had gone right off to Manchuria or someone like that, really far away. And it's only recently that we've found that he didn't. He stayed in Shanxi. And we believe we were kept near him, though it seems incredible, but it would account for some of the rather unexpected moves we made.
Yes. What evidence have you for that?
I don't know. It was Margaret Stanley found a report of where he had been.
Yeah, she's investigated quite a lot.
She has. Yes, she's gone into things much more deeply than I have.
Yes. The idea of taking the hospital with you, was there a purpose behind this? You know.
Yes. Every time they expected us to be able to find somewhere where we could set it up again. You see, we moved into a village and people were asked to move out of their caves to make accommodation for us and the other hospital staff, and then for patients as necessary. And it's amazing, really. I never saw any argument about this, even though we were taking their homes and it meant doubling up. I imagine the villages were probably closely related within the villages, so they could move in with the relations. Nevertheless, they must have been very crowded, and we never met any sign of problems. And occasionally, they would come and say, could they possibly, well, you know, with sign language, because really their accents, some of the other Chinese couldn't understand them. They would come in and they would get some spices out of a little drawer or something like that that they'd left behind.
Were you expecting to help with the battle wounded when you set off?
Yes, we did. We felt that was it was quite correct that we should deal with them under the circumstances.
And so you were expecting fairly big battles, were you, on this?
Well, not really big battles, because the terrain absolutely did not lean itself to big battles. They were little local skirmishes. And when we saw anyone from the local army, their equipment was very, very primitive in that area. Later, when we went further north, near Harbin, we saw mules with much carrying pieces of much heavier artillery, and they were much smarter and much more advanced than anything we ever saw around Yunnan, where everything was extremely primitive. We would be told that in the border regions around Yunnan, when they went into battle, there'd be two soldiers for every gun, so that if one was shot, the other one could pick it up. And everyone hated being a medical orderly, because they never had a gun, and there were more as many casualties among the medical orderlies as there were among the soldiers.
Can you remember when you set off yourself from Yunnan, what you took? You know, you've explained how you took your trunk up to Yunnan.
Oh, yes.
Were you able to take all that with you? Or
well,
did you have to...
We said we would leave our heavy stuff, and we did sort it into the important things. Our spare pair of shoes and your sleeping bag was the most important thing. We took a little bit more than that, but we did try and sort out what we really needed and told them that, you know, it could be left behind. But somehow or other, they always managed to get it all together again. I don't think we lost anything. It was amazing. I felt guilty about that, because a lot of it, really, we could have abandoned.
You, from what you've said of the route, you know, and the way you were sort of curving back on yourself, it sounds quite like the initial long march of 1934.
Well, I suppose it was, really. Mm. It was. We covered enormous distances, and we did have to come back on our tracks on more than one occasion, because we were told that there'd been a battle and it was now safe to go the route we were taking, and things like that.
How about the situation of the ground? You know, was there ever the luxury of a track or a road?
There was always a track. There was always a track, but very, very primitive, because we always had to have the pack animals had to be able to take go along it. I mean, they were obviously often very difficult and very stony and very hilly. It depended on the season of the year, but sometimes they were very, very muddy. And sometimes we were held up because a stream would be in spate, and we had to wait for it to go down. Yes, there'd be rocks, and there would be rock falls and so on, so that you'd have to go around. But it was always up and down, because of the layout of the terrain.
How many miles do you think you travelled a day on a good day, and then on a bad day?
I should think we walked perhaps 20 miles on a good day. Of course, the trouble was there weren't good days and bad days, because we had to get to a certain place that someone would have gone ahead and arranged where we'd got to get to. Once we got lost, fairly early on, we took a wrong turning, and they were very, very, the hospital authorities were terribly worried that we'd been captured by the nationalists. They were very afraid all the time that we would be captured and ill-used, and then it would be blamed on the communists. So we were rather a responsibility for them. So we felt very upset. It was some mistake. We had the interpreters with us, so it wasn't entirely our fault. But we did walk as much as 20 miles in a day. But less than 10 was the usual amount they expected of us.
And the transport, you've mentioned quite a variety so far. What animals were used for?
Until the very much later stages, it was always mules and donkeys for the equipment, and I think they provided a horse that we used sometimes. And then when I was rather pregnant, they carried me on a stretcher, because I'm afraid I'm no horsewoman. I felt very ashamed about that, because all the Chinese seemed to be able to ride horses and carry babies in their arms because later they had to carry David in a cradle. But we walked. Later we did have to travel, but not much later. We did travel in ox carts and horse carts and things. But that was when we were after we'd been to Yan'an. I don't think we travelled in carts like that before. Yes, that's right. At one point, the luggage was carried by camels. That's right. And we even saw a camel carrying babies in baskets, rather like David was being carried on the side of a mule.
Were there any communications between this column on the march and sort of a headquarter group, do you know?
I think there must have been runners that kept in contact, men who literally ran or possibly had horses. Because we did follow instructions from some higher authority.
Did you ever see anything of the Kuomintang yourself? For instance, planes?
No. Yes, we did see. I saw planes on about three occasions, I think, only. Mm. But I never saw any soldiers.
You mentioned...
Except when they were brought in as casualties. Some of the patients were Kuomintang, yes.
Mm. I'll ask you about the patients later on. Mm-hmm. But while we're on the journey, crossing the Yellow River... Was this quite hazardous?
Oh, yes. We crossed it a number of times, most times by barge. They were pretty hefty-sized barges with about six oarmen. They used to pull them about 3 or 4 miles upriver from where they wanted to land, because the Yellow River flows extremely fast at any time of year, and it's quite a formidable river. And very, very full of silt, absolutely. I mean, the word in Chinese for yellow and brown is the same, and the river is not yellow, it's brown. You'd somehow climb into these boats, and they'd chivy the animals in, too, which was I'm glad the RSPCA wasn't there. They'd push off and row like mad to try and steer it across, and it would be swept downstream by the current, and you'd... land the other side, a long way down. But then also we crossed by a bridge where there was a gorge. The river flowed in a deep chasm, and a bridge had been made with three steel cables, and there were boards put across, and there was light like chicken wire at the sides. And it was, you know, I've got photographs, and it doesn't really show the size of it and the way it swayed. And, of course, they used to pick the boards up at night, or if there was any danger of bandits or enemies of any sort, so that the bridge couldn't be used. So these boards were all loose across, and they unloaded all the animals and blindfolded them, I think, to lead them over this bridge. And I know the boys who were carrying David in his cradle were very nervous, so I thought, well, I can't be nervous, so I had to I took the leading one by the hand, I think, and led him across, and sort of just felt I'd got to get over without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. But was that worse than going over the river, do you think, going actually on the water?
In some ways, yes.
Were you frightened of these things?
Not terribly, I'm glad to say, no.
But no, did anyone fall in?
Oh, no. No, nobody fell. And the animals were safe. They would have been the hazard. If the animals had panicked, then that would have been they would have fallen. And, of course, that would have caused absolute havoc.
Was it very thick, the water? You know, it's the whole
Yes,
hole,
it was,
isn't
actually.
It?
Yes. Mm. At some point, Frank Miles and Eric swam in it. And they took their towels in them. And we never got those towels clean, never. And they, I mean, they were filthy when they came out. It was absolutely ridiculous. We had to find some clearer water somewhere and wash them down.
Where would the boats have come from? Would these have been...
Oh, they were permanently there. This was a permanent permanent crossing. They were always there. I think they had a special, almost a timetable of when they crossed. Because I know I found a reference in Eric's diary to whether we should go over the bridge or the boat when we were coming back again. And they said the boat only goes twice a week or something like that. And so it was... I forget how it all worked out, but I certainly there was an indication that there was some kind of a timetable for these boats.